Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
This week on The Wheelhouse. Election 23, the recap. Who won? And why do we care? For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm Frankie Graziano. This is The Wheelhouse. It's the show that connects politics to the people. We got your weekly dose of politics in Connecticut and beyond right here.
The city's a mess. The school system is horrible. The taxes are insane. So I don't know where to go. The city's corrupt.
Well, there is a lot of issues. The taxes, high taxes, the school system. They need a lot of help with the school system. A lot of property owners, they are outside of the state. They come and buy property here, and then they just leave. They just want the money, don't take care of the properties.
So yeah, this is my first mayor's election, so I feel that coming in to vote will mean that I put my part in, and I can't complain if I do my vote.
Boy, everybody's so happy in 2023, but that's some great sound gathered together by my colleagues at Connecticut Public covering the election yesterday. Some of the Connecticut residents who voted in yesterday's municipal elections talking about some of the issues on their minds and their experience at the polls. The Wheelhouse has been all over this year's mayoral races. Thank you to the great staff that we have for doing this from the primaries onto the campaign trail. And through Election Day, we were right there with you. We're wrapping up our coverage today, the day after Election Day, beginning with where we left off last week in Bridgeport. My colleague, Bria Lloyd, was on that show to help us sort through what's been happening there. But that was before Judge William Clark ordered a new Bridgeport primary, citing a volume of absentee ballots in the city, quote, mishandled so much that it cast the result of the primary election in serious doubt, unquote. Still, residents in Bridgeport got to vote yesterday anyway. To get to the bottom of what the heck is going on in the Park City, we got to go back to Bria. Bria happens to be sitting right next to me, to my left in studio. Good morning, Bria Lloyd, investigative reporter, The Accountability Project. How are you?
Good morning, Frankie. I'm doing good. How are you?
You look great for somebody that was just enveloped in madness yesterday.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Join the conversation if you want to talk to us today, 888-720-9677. All right. Mayor Ganim, he had the most votes yesterday by a narrow margin. If you talk to John Gomez, I think it was something like 176 votes. Can
Correct.
You remind our listeners about why, despite having more votes, Ganim may still have to win more elections to keep his job?
Yes. So as you said earlier in the show, what the heck is going on? I think that's a great question and a question everyone has right now. So as you said, the judge ordered last week that the primary would have to be redone. And I think it's important to note that no one knows exactly what is going on and how this will look in the end. And so the Secretary of State said yesterday she expects a judge will have to get involved to kind of figure out next steps here.
Yeah, so nobody should be pretending that they know right now, because you'll probably be wrong. As I might have been thinking that maybe John Gomez had a shot as of maybe like 10:30 or 11 o'clock last night. Hey, Ganim addressed a crowd in Bridgeport just after midnight. Bria's tap party partner, Kate Seltzer, was there. Here's what she captured Ganim saying.
Tonight, vengeance and bullying loses division and progress.
Ganim sounds like sort of a hellfire and brimstone kind of pastor there. How did he, and I guess how did his challenger, John Gomez, react to the results?
Yeah, it appears from what Kate's told me that Ganim is calling Gomez to drop this entire case. He says, I've won two races now, and the voters, they've spoken. So, you know, listen to them and what their votes say. It's unclear if Ganim will appeal this case. We're still waiting to to find that out and hear what he'll say. And Gomes seems to be saying this is not over. Last night at his party, that's what he was saying. And it seems like he still wants to keep pushing forward with this lawsuit.
That sound you hear on the background is me sipping some tea and eating some popcorn to what's happening in the Park City. You and I were going back and forth yesterday as you were down at the polls in Bridgeport. God bless you for doing that yesterday, gathering tape. You got some reaction from voters in the Park City regarding the ballot stuffing scandal and the ordering of a new primary in Bridgeport. One quote you sent me, I liked it. It was from Leslie Moncada. I was embarrassed, she says. It's just ridiculous and outraged. What else did you hear from voters there?
I think a lot of voters on all sides, no matter who they were voting for, were just feeling very... They were not surprised by what was happening with the absentee ballot lawsuit in the case. I think a lot of them were just very frustrated. And I think I was also hearing from them, too, that some of the biggest issues that they have are crime, taxes, education. And those were some things that that they'd like to see improved upon as well.
And it's not what people are talking about in the Park City, at least not the politicians. They're talking about getting rid of absentee ballot boxes, things like that, court cases. They're not talking about those issues that you're talking about. And I imagine that's frustrating for the people you talked to. Do we know how things went in terms of voting in Bridgeport yesterday? I understand that there was actually an election monitor that actually did happen. Any idea about what her task was?
So the Secretary of State said yesterday that the monitor was supposed to go with election workers to pick up ballots from the drop boxes in the city. And the monitor was supposed to be stationed at the city's central counting location where the absentee ballots were counted.
Connecticut's top election official addressed the Bridgeport mayoral election, as I think Bria alluded to earlier. She said that there were no complaints filed to the State Elections Enforcement Commission out of Bridgeport yesterday. Stephanie Thomas, Secretary of the State, said that, except for just one related to the eligibility of a group of curbside voters in the city. I know it's a bit muddy. Help us move forward here. When maybe would Bridgeport residents vote next? Do we know anything about that?
At this time, we don't. I think we're still waiting to figure that out, and hopefully we'll know something soon. But I think everyone is just kind of on edge waiting to figure out what happens next right now.
Bria is just a terrific NPR reporter. She knows how to tell you what the truth is and nothing but, and I appreciate that. That's it for now. At the rate that we're going, when you leave this room, I'm going to have to probably call you back in with all the things that are happening. Thank you seriously so much for all the work that you've done on this.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bria Lloyd, investigative reporter, Connecticut Public's Accountability Project. So we say goodbye to Bria, and next we move on to another major Connecticut city, Waterbury, to break down what happened in that mayoral race. We're joined by another friend of the wheelhouse, Livy Stanford, reporter, Waterbury Republican American. Good morning, Livy.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on here this morning and telling us about a new mayor in Waterbury. Who is Paul Pernarewski, and what has he done for the city?
Well, Paul Pernarewski has been on the Board of Aldermen since 2001. He's been, very involved in the city. He is a former general counsel for the Connecticut Airport Authority. And before that, he's worked as assistant attorney general. So he's lived in Waterbury his entire life and has been in the government for quite some time, since 2001.
And close with Mayor Neil O'Leary, as he's been chair of the Board of Alders during O'Leary's run. And we know that O'Leary worked on a lot of brownfield conversion projects. I know that because of your great reporting, Livy, some of
Thank
which
you.
Are still active. Does having Pernarewski around to transition from O'Leary, does that kind of mean well for the city's continued economic development? What do you think?
I think so, because I think that O'Leary built a lot of trust with the state and was able to really bring a lot of grants into Waterbury when it came to brownfield remediation. And I think that's really important because there's still so many brownfields left. I mean, there's about 30 brownfields, and they have remediated about a dozen. They're working on a dozen of them out of the 30. So there are more brownfields there than what O'Leary has been able to do. But O'Leary has been seen as a state leader on brownfield remediation. And has been lauded by the EPA and DEEP for his work on brownfields. And many in the state, including Lieutenant Governor, the governor, and others have said that they believe Mr. Pinarewski will continue that important transition.
And can you tell me about maybe where the two men are different?
Well, I think that that's still, you know, that's a good question. I know that one area that Mr. Pinarewski brought up recently in a chamber debate is that he differentiated with the mayor on education and that he wanted to bring in a liaison between the superintendent and the mayor's office to bring more communication and more accountability in light of what has happened with that situation with the Department of Justice inquiring about school-based arrests regarding Waterbury schools and the Mayor O'Leary not knowing for 9 months or so. So that's where Paul has differentiated himself and has even said that he differentiated that there needs to be more work done in that area.
Where were you last night? Were you able to get to the victory party? And if you did, what were people saying there?
Yes, I was at the Portuguese Club, which is where they were waiting for the results. And there was, you know, moments of you know, anxiety and it was tense for a while when the numbers started coming in as there was only 571 votes separating Mr. Pinarewski and Ms. Dawn Morano. So there was a lot of, you know, anxiety at first and then elation, and everybody was just very excited about him being elected.
Anxiety and elation. What about Pinarewski's challenger, Dawn Morano? How was she feeling after the loss? What did she say?
Well, I was at the Pinarewski's headquarters, but my colleague, Paul Hughes, was at Dawn Morano's headquarters. And I know that she was, there was elation because of the fact that it was so close. And I feel that Ms. Morano did say that she wants to continue to be, that the voters have spoken in the sense of that this was so close and that she will, you know, that she's asked to meet with Paul Pinarewski and that meeting together, hoping to continue to be a voice from what I understood from my colleague on the front, on the Morano headquarters front.
Was it fine? What was the final tally? Was it close?
Well, it was. It was Pinarewski had 6,267 votes and Dawn Morano had 5,696 votes.
Some important perspective out of the Brass City from Livy Stanford. We're going to get continuing to follow your work as we have a transition to a new mayor in Waterbury. Livy Stanford, reporter, Waterbury Republican American, thank you for coming on this morning.
Thank you so much.
Folks, this is The Wheelhouse. I'm Frankie Graziano, and I got some news for people that listen to the show. We're doing a year-end show, actually, where we look back at 2023 and we look ahead to 2024. Breaking news. Can you believe the next U.S. presidential election is a year from now? Ooh. Anyway, this show is going to be taped in front of a live audience, and we want Wheelhouse superfans to be there. God, we hope there are some of you out there. Come and meet me. Maybe you'll meet a surprise guest. Maybe you'll meet Ollie the Octopus. If you want to come and see the Wheelhouse live, email wheelhouse@ctpublic.org. That's wheelhouse@ctpublic.org. More on elections in 2023 next on The Wheelhouse.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygening it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed. And in our center, with a special ECMO on the Go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to Hartford for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
This is The Wheelhouse from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Frankie Graziano. We continue to talk about election results in Connecticut, and we take a trip down 84 from Waterbury to Danbury, where for the last 22 years, a Republican has been in charge of the city. Well, as my next guest and I are about to get into, the Hat City is under new management. Robert Storaci, a reporter for the Connecticut Examiner, joins us now. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Frankie.
Hey, Democrat Roberto Alves, he unseats the Republican Dean Esposito in a rematch of a closely contested mayoral election 2 years ago in Danbury. What did you hear about how Alves was able to get the edge on Esposito this time?
Well, it was a very bitter campaign. And I just think, I mean, Roberto Alves is out there. He was having TV ads. I didn't see any from Esposito. He was on social media a lot. He was doing a lot of door knocking. And some of the bitterness might have stuck. I mean, he was saying a lot of things. I mean, one of the things that Esposito was doing was saying that Alves wanted to defund the police. And that was because he had the support of the Connecticut Working Families Party. And some people of that party nationally had said that, but not statewide. And Alves really went after him on that, saying that's a crock. It's not true. And so there was a lot of bitterness. And that came across last night, because in his concession speech, Esposito was very bitter and saying a lot of things such as it's hard to believe that I lost to that guy.
Oh my God.
And he said, I am sore. He said he made statements about me that weren't true, he said last night. And then he also said that the Republicans are going to be, quote, we will call you out every step of the way. So he was very bitter. He was very bitter in his concession speech last night. And that was kind of par for how the campaign went, especially the last few months.
Yeah, tough after just one term for Esposito. I would imagine that's part of the frustration there. On the other side, elation, as I understand it, from Roberto Alves. What was he saying?
Yeah, he was. I was at Esposito's headquarters last night because I thought he was going to win. So then I rushed over to Alves's and I kind of just missed his congratulatory his speech, but I did get Tong, AG William Tong was there. And he was talking about how proud he was of Alves, and that he's an immigrant, and that if I can do it, me being Tom can do it, and Alves can do it, then anybody can do it. So it was a mob scene there. It was at the Portuguese Cultural Center. There were hundreds of people there. He was drinking. Alves was drinking with people. He was talking to them. It was very 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 upbeat and. So it was a very upbeat moment for the campaign. And
you guys, Greg Stroud and company did a phenomenal job with the rolling coverage article you had last night for the Connecticut Examiner. Headline of the article read, "Big Night for Democrats in Local Elections." Would you say that's most evident in Danbury, Robert, or do you have somewhere else? What do you think?
I think it's accurate to say that it was statewide. It was very... I mean, we haven't had, as you mentioned, it's been 23 years. It's interesting because Danbury is a very Democratic town. Registered Democrats outnumber registered Republicans by 600. And so it's kind of interesting that every 2 years you elect a Republican. And I guess this time they just wanted a change. They were tired of the status quo. It was a shocker to a lot of people, but I guess the people just wanted a change. They want something different. And Alves won by 463 votes yesterday. So it wasn't like 2 years ago, and it was just like less than 200 votes. It was kind of like, I wouldn't call it a mandate, but it was a lot of votes that he had yesterday.
Big day for, I guess, Democrats in the state, if you're paying attention to the coverage, but also a big day for Robert Sturaci yesterday, as you were in Danbury, Waterbury, and New Britain. Hey, can you give me a quick word on what happened in New Britain yesterday, Robert, in the last 30 seconds or so?
Yeah, sure. Well, Mayor Stewart, she won for the sixth two-year term, and that's interesting also because that's a Democratic town. It's Democrats outnumber registered Republicans by 4-1 there. Her Democratic challenger was a guy named Chris Anderson, and his big thing was on taxes. The homeowners' taxes going up like $1,000 for a lot of people. He focused on that, but in the end, I think and he's a newcomer to New Britain. So in the end, I think it was Erin Stewart's face recognition, her name recognition, the fact that people know who she is, and apparently they like her because they keep on electing her in a Democratic city. So. And businesses and her big campaign was in economic growth, business development, and they've been having a lot of economic growth in that city, especially over the last 18 months, 24 months.
Yeah, you're not going to hear me complain about being up late last night because I don't have the kind of jet lag that Robert Sturaci does from going all over the state. Robert Sturaci, a reporter for the Connecticut Examiner. Thank you for joining us, Robert.
Thank you, Frankie.
Thank you so much. West Haven, another city with a Democratic mayor, but that's also changing mayors. State Representative Dorinda Bohr was elected last night to replace Nancy Rossi, who announced earlier this year she wouldn't run for re-election. My colleague Kay Perkins talked with Bohr yesterday about going forward as the new mayor of West Haven.
Number one is we have to rebuild trust. We have to make sure our residents know that their taxpayer dollars are safeguarded. And that's what our residents, every door, they talked about taxes.
And my colleague Kay Perkins is here with me right now, a reporter for Connecticut Public. Hey, Kay, before we go into what West Haveners face in terms of a financial crisis, hey, do I have this right, Kay? Barry Lee Cohen, he's a Republican challenger. He conceded to Dorinda Bohr in person?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, Barry Cohen came to the Democratic Town Committee headquarters to concede in person. He got a big round of applause when he came through the door. They hugged each other and he gave a short speech. He said he sees this election as a referendum on change, but that Westies decided that they want Bohr's version of change and that he supported that decision.
Can you briefly remind us what the city finances are under scrutiny for in West Haven here?
Yeah, the change that Cohen is referring to there is that the city has become embroiled in a few different financial scandals over the past 6 years, mostly under current mayor, Democrat Nancy Rossi. Several different city officials have been implicated in various cases of the misuse of funds, including Rossi herself at one point. The most high-profile case of this was a city official who was convicted for stealing about $900,000 in COVID relief money back in 2021.
Yeah, the big COVID relief scandal. And with Rossi, it was with the city car or something like that that she was implicated in or at least looked at by city councilors?
That's right. Yeah, she purchased a car with city funds.
So what's Dorinda Bohr saying she could be doing, or at least working with folks to address the financial turmoil?
Yeah, she said she's hoping for a complete financial and budget transparency in West Haven. She wants to rebuild that trust. She wants to create a finance review board that will oversee all of the operations in West Haven and make sure that all city officials are properly trained in how to handle money. And she wants to work with the state government, which is financially reviewing all of West Haven's operations. She wants to work with the state government, get their advice to help build that trust back.
Kay's done a tremendous job covering West Haven for us during the primary campaign and as well as the general as well. Kay, thank you so much for your work. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Always great to be here, Frankie.
Yeah. And I just want to say that another open race for mayor was decided last night. Hartford, 38-year-old Hartford Land Bank CEO Arunan Arulampalam declared victory from Duncan Park, the home of the Yardgoats. I was also there Tuesday night. Four of his five children stood with him on a stage in a club-level area behind home plate. He addressed them after pledging to treat the children of Hartford residents as if they were his kids.
A lot will change starting after today, but I just want you to know that you will always be the most important people in my life, and I'm so proud of you.
from the capital city to the smallest city in Connecticut. Good turnout there yesterday. Officials in Derby say 44% of registered voters came out, and a majority of them cast their votes for, check this out, softball coach, in-school suspension monitor, girl dad to four young women, and retired public works employee, Democrat Joe DiMartino.
I'm proud of the campaign we ran, and I'm proud of the results we got tonight, and I'm just really happy and proud.
Hey, the guy's really proud. Incumbent Mayor Richard Zekin finished second. He didn't have the Republican line on the ballot, though. That belonged to Gino DiGiovanni Jr., who ends up in third. DiGiovanni won't be mayor, but he'll be in court Thursday. DiGiovanni faces charges related to his entering the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Justin Elker, still mayor in New Haven. The Democrat won a third two-year term. Big night for him and city alderpersons. Should Elker win in 2025 and I guess 2027, the job in 27 becomes a four-year gig. Yesterday, New Haven residents voted to adjust terms for certain elected officials. An effort to make several changes to Stanford's charter failed. The measures would have given more authority to members of the city's Board of Representatives. And in Killingly, Democrats won seats on the school board, which could bode well for student mental health and efforts to change a mascot name that's offensive to Native Americans. Republicans there had gotten the racist name actually restored, and they did nothing with funding for a student mental health center at the town's high school. Finally, real quickly in national news, there was a win for reproductive rights in Ohio as residents voted in favor of enshrining abortion into the state constitution. You had in Minnesota a city electing the state's first Somali mayor, and a man wrongly imprisoned in an infamous rape case, an exonerated member of the Central Park Five, snagged a seat on New York City Council. Man, we just talked about a lot, but we still got about a half hour to go. This is The Wheelhouse. I'm Frankie Graziano, and maybe the best is yet to come. A powerhouse panel featuring Susan Raff, Jonathan Wharton, and John Craven is next. You can join the conversation too, 888-720-9677, 888-720-9677. This is The Wheelhouse from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Frankie Graziano. We just whipped around the state to begin the show. I don't know if we were on a political tour, maybe on a wine tour. I think that's where I want to be next. Making stops in Bridgeport, Waterbury, Danbury, and West Haven. But now we're going to dive a bit deeper into yesterday's results with a powerhouse panel we got here. Joining me now, first off, Susan Raff, Chief Capitol Reporter, WFSB. How are you today, Susan?
Good morning. Well, I didn't see any wine last night in Bridgeport, just a lot of drama.
Yeah, how else are you going to get through that? You need wine. John Craven, News 12, Connecticut political reporter. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Frankie. You know, Susan and I were actually at the same party last night in Bridgeport, and there was a severe lack of wine. I will concur with that.
Somebody who maybe not thinking about the wine yesterday might have been thinking about the bourbon or something like that. Jonathan Wharton, the preppy prof, associate professor of political science and urban affairs at Southern Connecticut State University. How are you, Jonathan?
Doing well. Thankfully, I had a lot of wine in Naugatuck Valley. So thank goodness.
Now, what are we drinking in the valley nowadays for wine?
Well, they had plenty, but I at least had Pinot Grigio. So God bless people in Seymour.
You had a Pinot Grigio.
What are you drinking this morning, Jonathan?
Yeah,
I'm on my coffee tip. You know me, John.
Pinot Grigio is great, but in the Valley, I feel you got to have something Robusto. You got to have a little Robusto wine there. Hey, join the conversation if you want to talk to us. 888-720-9677. 888-720-9677. Susan, you get the first cue. We now heard from Bria Lloyd, who is my colleague, about people going to the polls in Bridgeport yesterday in an effort to make sure their vote counted. What did you experience in your time in the Park City on Tuesday?
You know, you got to love Bridgeport. They are very passionate people and voters, maybe sometimes too passionate. I'm not sure if that's correct. But there was a lot of interesting turn of events, as John Craven mentioned. We were both at John Gomes's campaign. 10 o'clock, he did address his supporters. and was, but cautiously optimistic, as he called it, telling people that he was up by 564 votes, which is really nothing. And at that point, the absentee ballots hadn't really come in yet. So it was a little premature, but maybe because people were there, they wanted to hear from the person they had supported. And then all of, you know, and Ghanem left his campaign headquarters.
That's right. He did leave his campaign headquarters. I wonder if at some point he was thinking.
Yeah, he left his party. He talked to reporters at about 9:20 and left. And then when the votes really kind of came in and it was clear that Ghanem had won again with those absentee ballots, just like in the primary, as you had mentioned earlier on the show, I think it was 173, very small amount. He came back to his party and had a midnight press conference. So he wanted to be the winner, and he wanted to publicly do that. He didn't want to just go home and wait till the next day to do that.
Is there anything? I was going to go somewhere else, but John, let me go with you here just a second. Anything to Ghanem leaving the party and coming back? Do you think there was a surprise turn of events yesterday, or is it just kind of the nature of things when you don't know that you're going to have results that same night?
Yeah, I mean, I was with Susan at Gomes headquarters, but I was talking to Frank Recchia, our reporter who was over at Ghanem, you know, and he said the same thing. He got a call from Ghanem on his cell phone saying, come back here. I mean, a lot of the media outlets had left and they all made a U-turn and went back for this, you know, midnight victory speech. And, you know, I'm texting back and forth with Frank Recchia saying, like, is he declaring victory? You know, can I put that on social media? And he said, yes, you know, the absentee ballots are back in. You know, and I think that, you know, Susan and I both had the feeling at Gomes headquarters when he announced that he had won the machines by only 500 and some votes. That's not a huge margin. And we looked at each other and said, you know, Ghanem can overcome that with absentee ballots. I should point out, you know, turnout was really low for this election. I mean,
yes,
people said that the primary election had low turnout, but this had even lower turnout. The absentee ballots were really low. And
Ghanem's win on absentee ballots wasn't as pronounced as it has been in the past. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was more than 800.
I think he won by what, 200 some last time?
Yeah. I think it was 23 or 2400 absentee ballots and far less. There were about 800. And it's interesting because I think that the Gomes campaign were kind of holding on to that, saying, well, if we have fewer absentee ballots, we're going to do better. But that really didn't work out. And so that always has been a plus for Joe Ghanem. But as you've heard all along, and maybe this was part of the night's equation also, it's not over. So where we go from here, I don't think John Gomes, who has said that if he won last night, he would drop his lawsuit and there wouldn't be a primary. You know, this could end up in the courts and maybe the highest court. I'm really not sure. And to be honest, I don't think the Secretary of the State right now and the Attorney General, at least not publicly, they're not really sure what to do either because this is so new and uncharted.
You said the Secretary of State. Naturally, when there's confusion about a local election, reporters will go to the state's top election official for clarity. Here's Stephanie Thomas when asked about the situation in Bridgeport. She actually asked about it multiple times yesterday.
I think what we can say for sure is that their votes for every other position on the ballot will count, and it remains to be seen what will happen with the mayoral race.
Also said Tuesday that only a judge can make that determination with regard to whether Tuesday's results could stand. Can anybody help me go forward and tell me what's next? Anybody?
Yes, I can please chime in here on that.
Go ahead, Jonathan, please help me.
Absolutely, because I've been obsessed about this, and I'm sure, you know, John and you know, Susan can chime in on this, is that I guess the game plan from here would be, you know, appeals taking place between the Ghanem camp and certainly between Gomes. But I'm interested in seeing the special election possibilities for the primary taking place in December and potentially even another general election in January. So you get December, January to continue on with this.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me interrupt you. Why is the December date coming up? Is that a 45-day thing? Why are we talking about December potentially?
It does have to be out several weeks for notification purposes, especially with the registrar of voters.
Okay, keep going. Sorry.
So the interesting thing will be beyond that is exactly what you said earlier, Frankie. You know, what's going to happen among the lawyers in making their decision here, and where they'll go with it, because this could go on. And I'm one thing I'm going to be really paying a special attention to is what you just mentioned earlier on, the turnout. If you're going to have these continuous elections going on for another primary, even another general election, are we going to see even a smaller turnout then, or will it be a bigger turnout?
What do you think? What do you think happened here? Do you think because of the low voter turnout, you know, one of the things that I've been trying to keep an eye on is, you know, did this whole scandal with the, you know, stuffing of the absentee ballots in the drop box by a Ghanem supporter keep voters away from the polls? Did it make them feel disenfranchised that they said, you know, it doesn't matter and the system is all messed up?
Susan, you know, I think it's been that way for such a long time in Bridgeport, even prior to this election. I mean, you can go back a few, and I think that it's just almost this nihilistic view on local politics, unfortunately, in Bridgeport.
I mean, guys, we should know a lot more this week about next steps. I mean, the judge issued his ruling last Wednesday, gave all the parties 10 days to come up with a new primary schedule. And so we'll be coming up on 10 days. I don't know if it's 10 calendar days or 10 business days, but I would think by the beginning of next week, we should have a date set by, you know, between the city, the parties, and the Secretary of the State's office about when the primary would be. And yeah, it seems like it will probably be in December. And now that the general election, the first general election, perhaps, is done, I think you can expect to see the Ghanem administration appeal the judge's ruling. Obviously, he doesn't want a do-over. He just wants last night's results to stand so that he can remain mayor without another primary. So I would expect them to file an emergency appeal with the state Supreme Court, maybe as early as today.
Yeah, your outlook, why don't you pump the brakes, John? I think your outlook is far too positive there. It's never that easy in Bridgeport. You're right. I know they said 10 days, but man, anything can happen. Only in Bridgeport is what Lenny Grimaldi says, doesn't he?
And you know, I'll say, though, this judge, Judge Clark, he was pretty no-nonsense. So I think he's going to really push the parties to stick to it. He realizes that the voters of Bridgeport deserve to have some finality here.
And then what happens to the other candidates? So if you have another primary between, you know, Gomes and Ghanem, and then you have, if you have a general election, you know, what happens to Lamon Daniels? You know, he gained a little bit more traction, I think, in the general election. I spoke to several voters, I think, who were so annoyed with both Ghanem and Gomes and all the drama that it's created that they, you know, they wanted someone, you know, new. I mean, granted, he didn't win. But what do those people do? They just hang on until the next election? I mean, how long can this go on?
Well, yeah, and we could talk about this all day. So we got to, unfortunately, say goodbye to Bridgeport. Man, that's hard to do. I've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks here on the show, but we had 20 years. Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
So one of the things, I don't know, I don't think it's been mentioned, you know, when you think that the drama stops, two Democratic city council candidates were actually arrested yesterday. Yes, at a polling place at JFK for two separate incidents. And we covered that. So I think that shows you, they were two separate incidents. One woman, I believe Maria Pereira, had already been a city councilor, if I'm not mistaken. And there was some altercation with an older gentleman. So, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, that you can never, you know.
And Bria said she saw two fights in Bridgeport yesterday. So,
yeah.
Oh, boy. Who knows what's going to happen there next? Hey, in Danbury, we had 20 years of Mark Boughton. Then we had 2 years of Dean Esposito, all told 22 straight years of Republicans being in charge of the Hat City. But Jonathan, that streak will be broken. Roberto Alves, a Democrat, is now mayor-elect in Danbury.
I was stunned by that, quite frankly. I've been following a bit of that race probably more than I want to admit, because I was always curious about this whole post-Mark Boughton phenomenon in Hat City. You know, for those of you who might remember, was a longtime mayor and has joined forces with Ned Lamont's administration now, being a tax commissioner. So, and of course, Dean Esposito was the former chief of staff for him. So yeah, this was quite interesting to see that the turnout there and what ended up happening for Ives to win.
John, this may be the biggest sign that Dems had a big night locally. I asked Robert Sturaci about this. I'm going to ask you about it as well, because I think there was a sweep, or at least a huge, maybe 14 to 16 seats. I forget how much the seats are, but I know there's maybe 15 or 16 seats on the city council there in Danbury. And then the clerk flipped as well. So is this kind of a big sign of what happened statewide yesterday?
Well, I think it's a really good night, as we've been talking about, for the Connecticut Democratic Party. I mean, you know, it wasn't just Danbury either. I mean, you've mentioned a couple other places, but just right down the road, Brookfield, Tara Carr was this very pro-Trump first selectman. You know, she got into some controversy for some social media posts that some said seemed threatening against Joe Biden. She was defeated by a Democrat last night. A January 6th defendant lost for mayor to a Democrat in Derby. The Democrats flipped Fairfield, which is a really big sign in Fairfield County. I mean, you know, Jonathan and I have talked a lot about how Fairfield County has gone from, you know, sort of the old Greenwich-style Reagan Republican to a more blue county.
And we're going to,
Fairfield has always been sort of a bellwether in this county.
And John, we're going to continue on this, but I want to kind of jump in, because when you talked about Tara Carr, it made me think maybe about a comment we're going to have and some general reaction from our next guest on the show. That's just going to be a caller here, 888-720-9677. Rachel from Stonington, you're on the Wheelhouse.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that before the Democrats get too uppity about their election results, I would just like to say why I voted Democrat. It's because I really couldn't find out anything about any of the candidates. So all I could do to make sure that there weren't any Trump-supporting MAGA Republicans being put in positions in the Department of Ed, the Board of Ed, and the City Council, the only thing I could do was vote straight Democrat.
And you're saying you're like more moderate, would you say, if you had to lean in any direction?
I used to vote Republican in the
gotcha.
Local election.
All right.
Was there not a lot of information out there with some of the flyers, or that it was just hard to really see where some of the candidates stood on some of the issues that are important to you?
The flyers tended to be very non-committal, non-factual. They were just kind of general, what anybody would say. Yes, I love America and I want to support the town.
Right.
It's kind of like what a lot of campaigning is on Facebook nowadays, where you just see kind of like what somebody's generally about and you don't really get the full thing. You know what, Rachel, you inspired me. Now I think we haven't covered enough ground. I feel like I want to get out to Stonington next time. Thanks for the call, Rachel, and good luck. Hopefully you'll be more informed the next time around. And always feel free to reach out to the Secretary of the State's office in terms of any kind of election information, and they'll try to give you some help. So on that kind of tip, I had thought, guys, that Brookfield was a place that was trending more red, but now we're seeing Tara Carr gone, as John mentioned, and Fairfield County, you see Bill Gerber win, the Democrat, over Brenda Kupchick. Does it seem, guys, like Fairfield County becoming more blue because of the kind of presence of ultra-conservative Republicans?
I wouldn't go that far, Frankie. I think
gotcha.
That, you know, let's be frank about what happened with Brenda Kupchick, right? I mean, it's only a difference of not too many votes there. And, you know, who's to say that could be a possibility of a recount? Because, you know, we still got to see the absentees. We got to still see what happens. I mean, there's this difference of 5,200 votes, give or take, here and there. So I think that's not over yet. And I want to stress that that was more about local issues and concerns related to the fire department. Here's some more hirings than it was this Trump business. So it's more local issues in Fairfield. And they have quite a robust RTC. I also want to mention that Milford was able to get a win too, which is obviously right next to, you know, Fairfield County. And so Tony Giantassa at least won that race against Kerry Rowland. So that was a big win for the local Republicans there.
Yeah, but you might not want to talk about Trump and MAGA. And a lot of people don't want to right now. But, you know, I see a lot of people in Fairfield County. I spoke to people recently following what was happening in Greenwich, and they were talking about, you know, kind of your sort of Moms for Liberty groups that are local in the area and kind of taking hold and, you know, maybe alienating folks. John, do you see that when you're down there? Susan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Frankie. Sorry, go ahead, Susan.
Go ahead. I agree that I think local politics has a different level sometimes than national politics. I mean, I think people know these people than they're in their communities, but you can't help but ignore some of the things that are happening in Washington and the dysfunction there. And some of the polarization. So that trickles down, I think, into local elections. But I think Connecticut, by and large, you know, for many years, Republican, Democrat. I mean, yes, there are people who are, dedicated to their party, but it's about the issues. But it was interesting about the woman who called in saying that she was so concerned and she wasn't quite sure what they were some of these candidates were standing for. So I think it shows you that people are concerned about the Trump factor and the polarization and what could happen. And so they're concerned about that.
John Craven.
Frankie, these local elections are really a tough barometer, right? Because so many things are either based on personality. I know this person. There's a lot of ticket splitting. I mean, Connecticut has a tradition of that, especially at the local level. I mean, Republicans still hold a lot of mayor, first electman seats, town council seats in towns that will vote for Ned Lamont for governor and, you know, Richard Blumenthal for senator. So I don't really see that changing. It is a tough barometer. But if you sort of back out and take the macro look at Fairfield County, you can't escape the fact that, you know, it has turned bluer. If you look at the state legislative races, the delegation has turned a lot more Democratic over the last few years.
Yeah, but you're talking about even in small towns like Killingly, Thompson, Brookfield, where the Democrats are gaining more ground, at least from what I understand now, because of, you know, incursions, I guess, from ultra conservatives here. So I don't know. I don't know where we land on it. I think that maybe there is something to the argument that this extreme kind of view of things, this extreme conservative view of things, is kind of impacting politics. Hey, I got to step away from Fairfield County because I got to have a little talk with Jonathan here in New Haven. Elliker wins. Anything remarkable about that race there?
You know, it wasn't a shocker. I will say one thing that surprised me, though, Frankie, is the turnout was a little less than 24%. In previous elections, in general elections, it usually hovers a little higher than that, usually 25-26%. And so that was interesting to me, that maybe it could have been a higher turnout, and yet that didn't quite happen there.
Why do you think that there's been such a low turnout? I mean, obviously, you can look at Bridgeport and, here we go again. But why do you think voters are not engaged and they don't want to go to the polls?
A great question, Susan. I think a part of it goes back to the primaries. We don't see a high turnout in the primaries in New Haven, similar to Bridgeport. Certainly not as bad as Hartford, where you guys might remember the primaries. Hartford was like, what, single-digit percentages? I think a part of this might be that you don't see real competition here in New Haven among, multiple parties, unfortunately.
Just really quickly,
we had that in Middletown also.
Good point.
We only got a couple minutes here. So, Jonathan, I want you to comment quickly on these charter revisions in New Haven. And you even had former Mayor DeStefano, who John DeStefano has said that he's tried to stay quiet over the last 10 years since he left office, commenting on this and saying that you do need 4-year terms for mayor and the Board of Alders there in New Haven.
Yeah, I wasn't so much surprised by that, actually, Frank. I'm glad you mentioned it, because it was in the New Haven Independent. He really stressed that there was a real need for some reform. For those of you guys who might remember, there was a charter change that also took place in Waterbury, New Britain, where they also changed the mayoral terms. But the fact that they wanted to amend this and include the alders with it really was a big concern for a lot of people here locally in New Haven. So it really kind of all came out. Even Abby Roth had also an editorial countering against at least making the change. So, Democrats were clearly divided on this in town.
Susan and John, you get the last two here. You get 30 seconds each. We're going to start with Susan. That's it for this year's election, but 2024 presidential preference primary. You might get some August primaries for seats in Connecticut's federal delegation. State races, 30 seconds. Susan, what do you think about what to look forward to in 24?
Oh, my God. You're putting me on the spot.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
We're always looking ahead.
I'm glad you went first, Susan.
Hey, there's a presidential election.
Well, there is a presidential election, and I'm going to assume that we're going to see a much greater voter turnout. I think, oh, you know what? I think the early voting, that's something that everyone talked about last night with the absentee ballots and the drop boxes. And a few people at both campaigns said, you know, once we have early voting, you know, things are going to get better. Let's hope for that.
Yeah, and we're getting cut off here. 15 seconds, John. Go ahead.
All right. The primaries, presidential primaries, are moving up a few weeks next year. So we'll have a bigger say in the presidential race, maybe.
Thank you so much to our panelists, John Wharton, John Craven, and Susan Raff. Hey, don't forget, as we said earlier, if you want to come and see the Wheelhouse live, email wheelhouse@ctpublic.org. That's wheelhouse@ctpublic.org. That's a December 6th event in Hartford, looking back at 2023 and taking a peek, as we just did, at 2024 in front of a live audience. Email wheelhouse@ctpublic.org if you want the deets. Today's show produced by Meg Dalton. Great job. Technical producer, Kat Pastor. Hey, how about Tess Terrible, Katie Solarski, for helping us in studio. Download the Wheelhouse anytime on your favorite podcast app. I'm Frankie Graziano. This is the Wheelhouse. Thank you for listening.